Banging on my door, my dear, my dear, my dear. I hear the shots ring, lay on the floor. I don't fear anyone but the maker, cause we could never murder hate, but can murder a hater. What's a more American way than trying to give them a taste of their own medicine? Prevalent ethnic rebels, a revolution of melanin. But to move to the ghetto, we must improve the development. Brought some food for the fellowship, got the news for my brethren. Call the goons in the government, come correct the corruption. Break the racial construction, building up in the spirit of liberation. Give me life or I'ma take it, that's my human right. University, you and I, we could be unified. But when you speak the truth beyond your youth, they want you euthanized. Creeping through the night, is something moving right?
Hold up, wait a minute,
intruders.
Tell me right. The corruption has moved in view of my eyesight. Hold up, wait a minute, tell me right. The corruption has moved in view of my eyesight.
Hold up, watch over me and my body, man. Trouble all around, can't trust nobody, man. Devil on my heels and they all wanna cross me. Loyalty to God and my loyalty to Bobby. I'm the
Panther man,
always lying on it to the cameraman. Death all around, pray we never light a candle, bro. Knowing somebody gotta die for our freedom, bro. Know they plotting on me, echo sounds at the battle room.
Ain't nobody I fear, I'm ready.
Watch my back while I press on steady. Load my gun, full clip, no hesi. The government, the pigs, the deceit like a levy.
There's blood thy hood with the blood of the soldier. Poor black man, look over thy shoulder.
COINTELPRO got the target on me. But we don't stand down to the people or free. Screaming.
Hold up, wait a minute, tell me right. The corruption has moved in view of my eyesight. Hold up, wait a minute, now I wanna fight. The corruption has moved in you.
And I
can't let you get away. Corruption has moved in view of my eyesight.
Once again, everyone, thank you for joining, and welcome back to another edition of Live from the Plantation. We were not able to be on last week. We have been preparing for the parole webinar with the National Freedom Movement, and we finally got a chance to put on the webinar. Hear from the new members of the National Freedom Movement, our research team, speakers from around the country. We had over 19 speakers. We had 19 speakers over the course of the three-day event, the 2 days of the webinar, where we are pushing forward our parole initiative, which is reinstating federal parole, and also to mandate parole criteria for everyone going up for parole so they'll know exactly what they need to do to earn their freedom back. For those who are trying to earn it back, it'll create a particular process step-by-step what needs to be done. And then we finished up the webinar on Saturday with a fantastic workshop. We have all of the video, all of the event was recorded. It's uploaded online in our Facebook National Freedom Movement fan page, and you can go on there and you can watch them, and we're getting them broken up, and people are excited about the content. And we're turning our eyes now to our April 3rd. We have commitments from 6 states We have other organizers in other states that want to support an event, but they have not yet had the organizations to step forward and put the event together. We have a commitment from California. We have a commitment from Texas, commitment from Louisiana, commitment from Alabama, and a commitment from South Carolina as far as the National Freedom Movement goes. And, of course, the organizer who called for the event, Peace Justice, will be having the event in Georgia. So that's a great lineup. It's great to be a part of it. It was great just being a part of the webinar event. I'm also joined in the host queue tonight by our outside coordinator, the founder of Be Frank for Justice. She's a member of many organizations. She hosted the workshop this weekend. Savannah Eldridge, she'll be joining just shortly, introducing herself. And we welcome anyone else. If you're interested in coming into the host queue, if you're a listener, if you have some news or anything you need to update us on, please press 1. If you have stories to tell, stories of injustice, wrongful convictions, or actions that you or your organization are planning, or if you want to get involved with the National Freedom Movement as we continue to try to coordinate activities around the nation, around these issues that are impacting us, want to just share a few things that are in the news right now, and I'll just be brief with those. New York, the state of New York, has passed the HALT Act, which is a bill to severely restrict and cut back on the use of solitary confinement in that state. I don't know if there's an age requirement. Didn't get a chance to get into the details. We do have several members from New York that participate in the National Freedom Movement. So if you're on, you're out of New York, you're listening tonight, and you can provide some information or updates on it, please let us know. We also saw today that the death penalty, state of Alabama, had 4 Democrats step forward and introduced a bill to abolish the death penalty in the state of Alabama. That was a great bill to see that happen in the state of Alabama. We know it's an uphill fight, but people seem to be ready to fight around the nation. There seems to be all type of activity. We're seeing all kind of bills. We're seeing a lot of grassroots organizations. We're seeing a lot of the traditional nonprofits. We're just seeing a lot of people involved, and it's important for people to be involved from the inside and leading some of these agendas and initiatives and letting people know what it is that we're seeking on the inside, what kind of changes need to be made, what they can do to assist us. And we need to be organized. We need to continue to organize from the inside, continue to try to link up, make connections with other organizations and people around the nation, because this is our fight. Like, this is our fight and this is our time. And so we have to be involved. And as I mentioned, also April 3rd, we have the parole initiative, and that is part of the 1 Million Families for Parole event that was called for out of Georgia. And we're excited about that. On your individual state, like, what are your other issues? Alabama, we're looking at the habitual offender law. We're rolling out a campaign called Ditch the Bitch. In Alabama, when the habitual offender law came out and when it started, this process of locking up tens of thousands of people, the old-timers, people who were in the system, they said it's the bitch law. They started calling it the bitch law. So we got a hashtag out called Ditch the Bitch. We're trying to ditch the bitch law, not just in Alabama, but there are habitual offender laws all around the United States. California has, Texas has, South Carolina, you know, basically all of the states, because this was mandated in the crime bills that we covered. Our research team did an excellent job covering the 6 crime bills. The main drivers behind some of these laws, they're not the only drivers. They're just some of the more prominent, more well-known bills. Which leads us into the webinar. We had a great webinar. We had speakers from, literally all over the place, from California to South Carolina. We had people on talking about these issues coast to coast. It was a very informative, educational event over the course of 3 days. We're excited, and we're continuing around. It was not a one-off moment. We did not organize that to be part of a moment. We organized it to put it together to continue to advance this movement, to create pathways to freedom for all 2.4 million people who are being held hostage, kidnapped against our will in these death camps that they call prisons, immigration detention facilities, county jails, city jails. They're all based on the same premise. They're all inhumane, and we must organize to dismantle this whole carceral state, as it's called. Max will tell you it's a plantation system. That's the actual word. It's a plantation system. This is how the institution of slavery has always been ran, and now it's a state enterprise, and the states are using it. They're running it just like any other for-profit corporation, except they're not paying the workers or the slaves. So that's what we're here for. You know, there's been some great news about some bills, the abolitionist movement with the removing the slave language. Saw a great debate out of Tennessee. Saw Dr. Ben Carson, surprisingly, one of the four Republicans who voted against removing the language out of the state constitution. So there's so much going on. We're seeing out in California, our sister Jamelia Land doing a great job out there organizing her and her husband. Like, I remember we asked the question of Max when we was going through Free the 13th, and I said, imagine what the 13th Amendment would have looked like if a slave had wrote it. And sure enough, a person who's enslaved in California wrote the bill to abolish slavery in the state of California. And his wife, she's galvanized the community. She went, kicked down all the doors, congressional doors, local, city, state, whatever she had to do to get that bill out there. And they worked as a great team. And it's coming to fruition. They're on the cusp, you know. And so I take special pride in that, knowing that one of us did that. You know what I'm saying? That's like different. That's different from when people on the outside doing it, and we doing it for ourselves, you know. And that he was able to navigate that with his loved one, and to maintain, you know, just a presence in that, you know, in that whole process. And like, that's so very important for all of us. Like, getting the job done is the most important thing. That's the most important thing, and no matter who do it. But the fact that one of us did it, it just adds a little more, you know, credibility to what we're doing behind these walls. And it's like everything that you see going on around America, dealing with these slavery, these bills, this legislation, like, these issues became issues because the plantation, the people on the plantation made them issues. We made them issues. Like, if we had not made these issues, if we had not made sacrifices, if they had not done the hunger strike in California, if they had not done the work strike in Georgia, if we had not done the strikes in Alabama and then the national strikes, if these things had not occurred, like, these issues would not be discussed. They would not be on the platform. They would not be on the agenda. But we did stop. We didn't back down. And we're not stopping now. And now we're pushing parole and voting rights. And we're pushing these conversations about all of these things, like all of these statistics and everything that you see people talking about. They're talking about us. You know, they're talking about us and what we're going through. They're talking about our lived experiences. They're talking, some of them are talking about us in statistics. We're breaking those statistics down to the human factor and putting our stories out. And this is what's driving the movement. So just a big salute to everybody. You know, people in whatever your circumstance or condition, like, you're in a solitary confinement, you're in lockup, you're in the shoe, you're in population. If you just, wherever you're moving and operating and networking within this movement, you know, it's just a big salute to everyone who's working behind these enemy lines, because, like, we don't count our eggs before they hatch. We know that. We don't count the eggs before they hatch. But what we can do is to continue to be in this moment. Like, the baton has been passed to us. We have to continue to carry the baton. Let's just continue to carry the baton. Like, maybe we'll cross the finish line and we're in the race. But one thing is for certain, we have advanced the cause. We have advanced the cause, and we want to continue to advance the cause. And the National Freedom Movement is going to be a part of it, Free Alabama Movement, and all the other organizations. I always like to let other organizations, organizers speak for themselves, you know, to establish their own presence. Like, let everyone know, hey, we here too. Max, you want to say something tonight about some of the bills and legislation that's going on around the country? Give people some updates?
Yeah, sure. First, The brother that wrote that legislation for California's ACA 3 was Samuel Brown out in California. So props to Brother Samuel Brown. Just recently, we passed the third of five stages in New Jersey, and my wife, myself, Brother Yusuf Hassan, Dennis Thibo, we all testified in New Jersey to help push that bill forward. So it's like New Jersey is going to end slavery. We're also about to resubmit Ohio's bill to get it done there. At present, we have 12 states that have legislation, and I just got contacted today by Indiana, who wants to get theirs done. So that'll bring us up to a total of 31 states that are actively involved in slavery abolition by changing their constitutions. 31 states.
Sorry about that.
Still there with me, brother?
But also, yeah, I'm sorry. I was on mute. I was talking, but I was on mute. But also, I also wanted to point out, like, in Tennessee, like, that movement started from the inside, too. The people who were responsible for that stuff being brought to the forefront, that started in on the inside. Like, can you talk about that for just a minute, Max? And I don't know how much you know about the guys on the inside who were involved, the organization or whatnot, but can you just kind of, like, update on the process of those hearings and the opposition to it?
Well, Tennessee is started from the inside, but so did New Jersey. New Jersey started with the youth detention facilities out in Hudson County and Dennis Thibo. He acted as their voice to get that done. So it's happening in several states with people behind enemy lines making it happen, including youth detention facilities. But in Tennessee, that was the first time that we had any no votes in ending slavery. So we've had four states that have abolished it. And we've had hearings on at least six so far, and nobody's ever said, no, I don't want to abolish slavery until Tennessee. We got four no votes. One of them, who we're sure these are white supremacists out in Tennessee, by the way. We done did the research on them. One of them said that, well, it takes a lawyer to explain this, and since I can't explain it to my people, I'm going to have to vote no. Another one said, well, I don't believe that the framers of the 1870 Constitution wanted to keep slavery going, so because I think that way, I'm going to vote no. So they had four no votes, and that was the first for us. Everybody else has voted unanimously yes. But in Tennessee, we had four white people, old white men, stand up and explain how they wanted to vote no about ending slavery. But we also got to realize in Tennessee, that's the home of CCA, which is the number one for-profit private prison company in the country. It's now called CoreCivic. It was called CCA. But that's their home base right there. And it's also the home base of many of the Klansmen. So we expected some opposition from there, and we are blasting them already. As a matter of fact, the Breakfast Club, what's the brother that hosts that out there? The guy, what's his name? In the Breakfast Club,
Charlemagne the God.
Charlemagne the God did a whole segment on his dunking.
He went in on him.
He didn't realize that it's more than one state. He was thinking, you know, it's just Tennessee. He didn't realize that this thing is a whole national effort, but he definitely went in on him.
Right.
Why do you think he don't realize it's a national thing, Max?
Personally, I blame mainstream media. A lot of people get their information from mainstream
media. No, I'm saying, why do you think that Charlemagne is not aware that it's more than one place? What makes you say that? Did he say that, or is there something that you know that makes that?
It's what he didn't say. He made no mention about any other states or any other efforts to do this. So he talked as if it was a singularity, like this was something that needed to be done in Tennessee. And it's being done in Tennessee. So he didn't mention anything about any other states doing the same thing. So it wasn't what he said, it was he didn't say. That gave me the impression that he didn't realize it.
Okay. I was just curious of that.
Before we get off topic, I just wanted to plug what we're doing down here in Texas. So We had our House Joint Resolution 51 filed at the beginning of the year, and we had been waiting for the Senate companion bill and finally got that filed on March the 12th. So now we have a bill in the House Joint Resolution 51, and then Senate Joint Resolution 66. Both basically saying the same thing, that slavery is prohibited, even as punishment for crime, right? So what we're working on now is trying to get a hearing for our House bill. It's already been assigned to a committee, and so we've had some advocates and activists and peers across the state calling the State Affairs Committee, requesting a hearing for our bill. So our bill's in the State Affairs Committee, and the chair is Representative Chris Paddy, P-A-D-D-I-E, and his number is 512-463-0556. If you get a voicemail, you can just leave them a voicemail and let them know that you're calling to request a hearing for House Joint Resolution 51 on behalf of either yourself or the Coalition to Abolish Slavery Texas. And you can also call the Vice Chair, Representative Ana Hernandez. Her number is 512-463-0614. I called over the past few days, and I was basically told by the members, like, you know, you might as well just call the chair and the vice chair, because they're the ones that are going to be making the decision as to whether or not this bill gets a hearing. So we need, it's basically a call to action. We need all the help that we can get because we want to be heard, right? We've worked really hard campaigning. We've worked really hard trying to educate folks and reach out. So we want to make sure that people hear what we have to say, because we deserve that.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thanks a lot for that update out of the state of Texas. So just moving on along to some of the other issues that we have on the plate, like I said, in New York, they're working to end the solitary confinement out there in New York, which is great because we know that these solitary confinement cells, they're torture chambers. That's what they actually are. If people who have mental health issues, they isolate those. Like, many people don't know, like, the majority of solitary confinement cells are filled with black and brown people. Like, in Alabama, there's probably about no less than an 85% rate, 85 black. You may go into some units, there may not be a single white person in the unit, you know. And I know people tend to be discomfortable when we talk about race and racial issues, but a lot of times we don't be talking about race. We talking about facts. And the facts paint their own picture. And I mean, like, if you go into a unit and it's a punishment unit, restrictive confinement, and it's 90% black or 95% black or 100% black, and the camp is, you know, 30, 40, 50% white, like, I mean, it's the same over-policing that we see in the community. It's like the imagery and the association with wrongdoing and criminality and blackness, it's never separated. Like, every layer of the system, they have this. Like, every layer of the system, they're educated and taught this way. And so we're subjected to this stuff, you know. And I was doing some research on the immigration detention, because I've never been able to figure out, like, why is it that our movements are not more closely aligned? And this is not the answer, but this is just one of the things that I noted that stuck out to me like a sore thumb. Like, black people voted for Barack Obama, like, 90-something percent. The majority of the laws that were passed or that were enforced to their intensity surrounding this immigration stuff, a lot of it came from Obama, except for the Dream Act, when the political pressure started building, when the Latino community started organizing. But like Obama, they called him the deporter in chief. Like, he deported more so-called illegal immigrants, or whatever the term is. Like, there's so many derogatory terms when you think about it. When you put this story in its actual context and realize that this was their country that was taken from them, like, you really don't know how to define it. But be that as it may, I'm just using the language that's available right now. Like, these people were like the law enforcement, the task force, like a lot of this stuff happened under President Obama's watch. And so they're looking at it like the friend of my enemy is my enemy, because we're continuing to support these parties and these people in all these different ways. And they're looking at what they're, because we were blind, like we didn't know what these people were doing to us. We got caught up in the moment. The Bill Clinton stuff had us drunk. And then the skin color had us drunk. Like, it's so many issues. But I just noticed that was just one of the things I was putting myself in their shoes and be like, damn, they supporting this person, and this person literally is building all these immigration facilities, opening stuff up and doing all these things to us. And another thing I learned in the immigration issue is that, like, immigration has been criminalized. It's no longer pick them up in the portal. It's now pick them up, and they've turned it into a criminal offense. So now you're committing a crime. So now you're automatically going to prison. And then they started creating mandatory minimums, enhancers, and all this kind of stuff. So now this is the reason why the federal prisons are being filled up with Latino people. Like, this is part of what's going on. Somebody needs to go on mute. But this is what's going on with some of these issues. Like, there's a lot of intersecting issues, and some of this stuff is like they're looking at it from one perspective, and then they're like barriers. But we've got to figure out a way to break down these barriers. Because, and as I was reading and doing this research, I was thinking about this parole issue that we're, the parole initiative that we're pushing. And so when you start talking about parole for a person who's being, whose only crime is crossing the border and they got 20 years, like, what is a mandatory minimum for them? What does parole look like? Like, where do they parole to? Do they parole out of the United States back to Mexico? Or how does that work? You know, like, what would a parole curriculum look like for them? That was another question I asked myself. Like, what would the curriculum look like? They haven't done anything but damn cross the border. And so those issues made me realize, like, their issues in some respects are the same as ours, but their issues are very different. But their circumstances are the same, because we end up doing time side by side with each other. So I do believe that the reinstating federal parole and to the parole system would be a big boost for them, and that the mandatory parole criteria, like, I don't know how that part of it would work, but I know that parole and anything that shortened that time would definitely be, you know, something that they would appreciate. So I just wanted to try to get to understand some of the issues and trying to see, like, what would be the reasons, because I'm trying to understand not only why is it that we're not already united, but, like, what can we do to get unified? Savannah, you out there in Texas, I have very large population. So can you, like, speak about that? Like, there are organizations out there that deal with it differently. So I guess we're going to have to get some understanding from organizers and people in states where that's more of an issue. I even learned that it's only an issue in certain regions of the country. So it's like so many things about this stuff that we need to educate ourselves on. But can you talk about that a little bit, Savannah?
Related to, like, how to address the parole issues? I missed
well,
the last
just like,
part.
What are some of the barriers that you all have as far as organizing with those types of organizations around this issue? And what are some of the things that you heard say is a problem, or, like, where are some of the common grounds? Like, how do we bring all of these movements together?
So, first, shout out to Jorge Renaud. Like, I feel like we're so fortunate to have him, like, locally. He's just, like, the voice behind, you know, this parole issue, and he's done some fabulous work researching the issue and really offering solutions to how to fix this problem. I think some of the barriers overall, from what I've seen, is there's kind of been a little bit of a divide regarding how to address the parole issue, right? Because, you know, you have abolitionists who believe that, you know, we need to abolish all prisons. And then you have, you know, people who are looking at it, like, from a fiscal standpoint, right? And I think we go through this similarly in, when we're talking about the issue with, you know, abolishing slavery, right? Because we never want to talk or, you know, speak about people in a way that, like, we're just thinking about the money and really getting away from the fact that it's a human rights issue, right? And because one thing we have in common is that we believe that people deserve to be free. The thing I think that we divide on is, like, how are we going to get there, right? So there's several parole bills. I think the last time I looked, and I did mention on the last show, there were over 120 bills at the time. The last day to file was on March the 12th, but at that time there were over 120 bills filed in some way, form, or fashion related to parole. So, you know, there's a national initiative for Second Look, and we do have a Second Look bill filed here in the state of Texas. I believe it's House Bill 686, which, of course, I'm in favor of, which will basically after 20 years, folks who were charged under the age of 18, then they'll get, a review, a parole review. So it's for, you know, juveniles and not adults. Another great bill, which I just heard got a hearing, is House Bill 2331. And I spoke about that on one of the other shows, but it's really important because of the freeze that happened here in the winter storm that happened in Texas, and it addresses the lack of response on behalf of the prison system. So that particular bill, what it was asking, sorry, hold on, that's not 2331. 2331 is a parole bill. That's our common sense parole bill. Sorry, I'm getting them mixed up. So 2331 is the common sense parole bill, and basically what that bill is asking is to front load all programming, right? And that's something that we're in line with in the National Freedom Movement. It's like, hey, you know, once people go into prison, we need to figure out what type of programming they need and get it started right then, right? Right now what's been happening in the state of Texas is, you know, people go before the parole board, they get denied, and then they tell them, okay, you need to do this to get prepared, you know, like for your next hearing. So, you know, in the interim, folks are just kind of waiting around, like, you know, and they do get their IPP, their individualized treatment plan. However, a lot of times they're not given the tools they need to work toward, you know, whatever it is listed on that program, right? Sometimes people have the means through their family, you know, to go to get some type of secondary education. But as far as programming in the system itself, it's just not made available the way it should be. And so that particular bill is addressing what we're calling a common sense parole bill. And like I said, it's got a hearing. The other bill, 2793, is the one that I had referenced about the freeze and the winter storm, and really getting the prison system to focus on, like, how are they going to address it? Like, if there's another natural disaster, you know, or emergency situation, like, what are you going to do for the people? Like, we know what happened with the facilities, you know, plan operations and things like that, but how are we going to get the people, keep the people safe? Because, you know, we heard stories where people were, like, defecating in bags, there was no heat. Some units were without water for days on end. And so what that bill is going to require them to do is create an advisory board, which is going to be made up of folks in the community who have experience with emergency planning. I think it's calling for at least one person who is formerly incarcerated, somebody, at least a loved one or a family member. And this advisory board is going to be a part of the planning process, right? And part of that bill is going to allow this advisor board to work with the parole board and the executive director of the prison to take a look at, like, the parole, like, who could be possibly, like, released, like expedited release. So, of course, you know, maintaining public safety, but, you know, we also know that, like, there was something like 11,000 people who were not who had been paroled but waiting to be released because they didn't have access to programming because of coronavirus, right? And everything was delayed. So, you know, there's like crisis on top of crisis that prevented, that were huge barriers, right, to people returning into the community, not of no fault of their own, because they had done what they needed to do. You know, they were just waiting to get into these programs to just do that last little part. And, unfortunately, it was reported that, I don't know the exact number, but some people did die in the prison system waiting to be paroled. There's a lot of great bills. There's another bill, parole bill, that would actually commute sentences. So after someone's been on parole for 10 years, yes, 10 years, they could apply for a sentence, a commutation of their parole after 10 years, but they can't have any revocations at all. And I think sex offenders were excluded in that bill. And then Jorge's bill, I can't forget that. Jorge actually wrote and filed a bill regarding the makeup of the parole board. I believe he wanted to, in the bill, to make sure there was a mental health professional, at least, and I'm not sure, but, oh, someone who's formerly incarcerated or directly impacted. It said it in that way. So I'm assuming it could be somebody who had lived experience or a family member, but it did say specify directly impacted. So, but lots of great bills. I'm rooting for all of them. We are having a parole rally in Texas on April the 3rd at the Capitol. And so, of course, this is just the next step following our awesome parole webinar. It went great. I was really excited. Before I be quiet, I just want to shout out to the research team, because I just got like so much feedback about how much folks learned and how great the presentation was on day one. It was just so jam-packed with information. I know we had talked about, you know, it possibly having been like three whole days just because it was so much good information, but everybody did an awesome job. So
Savannah, you didn't, one of the questions I was asking, you didn't answer. I want to re-ask that question, make sure you understand me. Like, Texas is a state. Like, when I was doing this immigration research, Texas is part of the Fifth Circuit, and they have the most immigration cases than any other federal circuit court in the United States. And so there's a lot of organizing activity in the state of Texas around immigration, and that issue is not connected to the prison slavery abolitionist type of issue or movement. And so I was asking you, as a resident of Texas and being around that and being a part of organizations that have a large Latino population and working together with Texas Organizing Project and other organizations, like, how is that conversation had? What are the barriers, and why are we not seeing more unity on that front?
Oh, I missed that part. Oh, sorry about that. Okay. So, well, I'm glad you mentioned Texas Organizing Project, because, like, Texas Organizing Project has it down when it comes to trying to merge black and brown and keep those issues centered. Like, they have an immigration justice team who, you know, deal with issues, but we call it the crimmigration system. And you mentioned that, how, you know, people are being jailed and they're being detained. But I think the barrier really is that, you know, these relationships have been divided on purpose, right, by other groups. The similarities in the issue have purposely been removed to keep the groups divided. And so it's a struggle. Like, even talking about the slavery issue, right, the Coalition to Abolish Slavery, we've been talking about, like, how can we educate the brown community to see how the role that this plays in their communities as well, right? Like, and not having people feel like, you know, oh, this is just a black issue or African American issue. Some organizations do it better than others. I'll say that there are some organizations that have no interest in doing it. You know, like, you know, this is this is my issue, like, you know, to my community, and I'm focusing on my community. But the key is, like, education and helping people see that the harms that are caused in our communities and the Black communities, you know, are not far removed from what's going on in the brown community. I've actually lived in South Texas, so I've kind of done work in both just because, you know, I lived at one time just 2 hours from Mexico. So there were groups organizing around immigration rights, you know, protesting and organizing actually at the detention centers. But, like, as you mentioned, like, politics plays a huge role in that. And I personally feel like these issues are purposely kept separate, right? Because as long as the issues are separated and divided, then, you know, the people are too, right? Each organization just addresses it differently. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason to it. Like I said, a shout out and tops off. Hat off to Top, because they do have a better system of inclusivity between Black and the brown community. So to me, they are the template when it comes to that personally.
Okay, thanks a lot. I think we have a caller. Max, go ahead and bring the caller along. And after the caller, I'm going to give an update on something that just passed, this breaking news out of the United States House of Representatives regarding something we're actually talking about right now. So let's go ahead and bring the caller on, and then we'll get an update before we go into our first break.
All right, 9147, you are live from the plantation.
Hey. Max, that's me. I'm in a host key. I'm just chilling, listening. I just came in, man.
All right.
All right.
Okay. What we're going to do, the United States Congress, United States House of Representatives, passed legislation today creating a pathway to citizenship for the Dreamers, which are the children who came to the United States, people came to the United States as children, and they were being threatened with deportation. Some of them were deported, families were being split up and whatnot. So that legislation just passed in the House of Representatives. Like, we all, you know, we're all aware of that issue. Like, that has become such a political issue to the point that, like, but, you know, the organizing that they are doing, like the way that they're making themselves known and making their issue known, is something to be admired, to see how they've been able to come together. And just think about the predicament that they're in. Like, a lot of the people that they are fighting for face the threat of consequences every time they get involved. And it's like when we hear people talk, when we talk about family members over here in the U.S., and we talk about people and the family members be like saying that their loved ones are scared. The ones on the inside are scared. Well, like, these are people on the outside, and they are worried about losing their freedom, and they're still taking risks despite their fear. But the people on the inside who have already lost your freedom, like, you already lost your freedom. Like, you don't have anything else to lose. Like, when they get our freedom, they take everything from them. We don't have anything to lose. And we're afraid, and we're not moving like them. Like, and our problem has been here longer. It has been more egregious. Like, we done suffered more. We done had more casualties. Like, everything across the board, even though now it's all lining up to be the same thing. Like, the war on immigration is the war on drugs, except we're dealing with immigration. Like, they've criminalized immigration. They've added mandatory minimum. They've created joint task force. And they are starting to build new prisons for them and immigration detention facilities. And the federal government is coming to the rescue of the private prison. Like, everything that we've already saw and been through is what they're going through right now, you know, except for they're going through it under the label of immigration. We went through it under the label of the war on drugs. And so, and everything looks the same. The way that they're taking us in court, the police force. And guess what? Hundreds of these people are dying in custody. hundreds of people are dying in custody from police abuse. The same things we're going through, they're going through the exact same things. And so, like I said, I've been just trying to figure out, like, now what got me on this, you know, we've always wondered about this thing, but, like, I was on one of these large meetings where I saw all of these people, and you had blacks, you had whites, you had Latinos, and they were talking about these issues, and then you had an interpreter. You could get it interpreted in one language, and then one person to speak in English, then another person to come and speak in Spanish, and then they post into the chat. One person is posting in English, and another person posting in Spanish. And I just saw all of these moving parts working together, and that's what had me like, damn, there is some work, there is some unity on this issue. And then I learned that there are different groups, like there are different grassroots groups out there. They got the same problem we got. They got grassroots groups that want the whole thing, and then you got these other organizations, these professional organizations, they're all Latino, and these professional organizations are more watered down and go along, get along, and not doing too much bucking. Like, the same things are playing out across the board. Like, there's nothing different across the board, and we just got to figure out a way to bring these two struggles together. And I'm thinking that parole is a strong possibility. We're just going to have to do some more research. We're going to have to get someone who's fluent in Spanish that can come and help us write our flyers have got to start including Spanish language in them. Like, we have one coming out. We're fixing to change one of our core methods in the movement. We're fixing to change one of the methods that we use, and when we come out with this change, and it's dealing with work strikes, like, there's fixing to be some fundamental changes about the way that Free Alabama Movement and National Freedom Movement is going to talk about that subject right there, because I feel like, you know, from a personal perspective, like, the language is kind of like, it's not enough. It's not. I don't want to say it's counterproductive, but like it's not right. It has to be working. As we evolve, our understanding evolves, and we get more information, and things are revealed to us on a higher level. Like, you just have to make changes. You can't be stuck on anything. Don't get stuck on stupid, because that's what'll happen if you don't change. Change with the times, you'll miss something. So, what we're gonna do? We're gonna take our first break. Appreciate everyone for calling in and joining us. Okay, go ahead and bring our caller on, Max. And with it, after the caller, we'll go into break.
0916, your line is open.
Hey, everybody. This is Lulu. How y'all doing?
Hey, what's up, Lulu? Lulu, how you doing?
Good. I'm sitting here doing my daughter's hair. So let me call in and get in on this. What you said, you know, about people being on the outside coming from, you know, fighting this whole immigration battle, you have to still take into consideration the mindset of a person who has been incarcerated and locked down for years. Yes, they have nothing to lose, but they all still are waiting on that hope that one day, someday, soon, they can get back to the life that they once knew. Whereas people coming here from other countries, you know, a lot of times, you know, I hear people who I know work for Border Patrol and things like that, where they say people will walk to the border in labor just to drop their babies on the United States line. And so they're coming from a different place of desperation in order to live in a lot of cases. Like, everybody's not coming. You know, I think in the United States we're spoiled. We're spoiled to a certain extent because of the way that we live and the way that we're able to live and the things that we see people coming from other countries willing to do just to get in this country already puts them at a different level of, I don't know if you want to say fight. So when I see people, you know, when you talked about that and you say, well, why is it that, you know, the people who are incarcerated won't even fight for themselves and these people are on the outside fighting, you know, just as hard, and that's because they've come from something that we don't necessarily understand. You know, a lot of people will say that Americans, even though we don't think it's that great over here, you know, we live life with a silver spoon. And so I think that the only way people will fully understand that is understanding where those groups of people come from and why their fight is so serious. You got a lot of people coming from asylum situations. A lot of people just want their children to be born in the United States, and so they fight. But once they get up, they'll do anything to get over here. A lot of people. And that's the experience, and that's the knowledge, and that's what we know, right? But the people who are incarcerated are used to being able to either live a life that they consider and call normal, and they enjoyed at one point in time until life changed. And so I think that that's the difference about why people on the inside are always too scared or not willing to do enough. And, you know, it's all like a victim of environment, for lack of better words, because I can definitely tell you the difference between those incarcerated in New York versus those incarcerated in South Carolina is a whole different ball of wax. Like, you know, just trying to get people to even come together and work together in South Carolina is like pulling somebody's two front teeth out.
Well, let me ask you this, Lulu. Like, I kind of get some of what you're saying. Like, okay, so, but the people that you're talking about, like, the things that they're doing now that you described accurately is desperation, like they're coming for a better life. Okay, all right. The people who are incarcerated in the United States should be coming from that same perspective, because our situation is the same. But those are not the people that I was asking about who should be united. Like I'm saying, those people that are desperate to get over here to experience these things. Okay, the United States has criminalized that. And they are now locking these people up, mass incarcerating them, giving them 20-year minimums. And these folks are spending decades and decades in federal prisons because of that. And so the question I was like, why is it that we are not in lockstep, or we are not united with those people once it becomes that they're criminalized and they're locked up for it? Like, why is it still a separate issue? Why are we still, they fighting immigration over here, and we're fighting this? Because this is something else that I learned. The Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act affected immigration. I didn't know that. I also learned that at the same time that, and then I didn't even think about the backside, like the 1 year and all of that, that affected them too. I'm saying, but there were immigration laws in there, because remember, let me back up. Like, there were other immigration laws that was criminalizing immigration at the same time that the Anti-Drug Abuse Act was being filed, the Sentencing Reform Act was being filed. So they were criminalizing this stuff all at the same time, and then using some of the same laws. And so that's what I'm saying, like, why is it that we are not, the fight is not in lockstep? I understand that we're coming from different perspectives. We're coming from one lifestyle, they're coming from another lifestyle, but we're meeting up at the same place in the criminal justice system. We're all being put in handcuffs by the same police forces, and they're putting us in the same cages and in the same cells and in the same prison, and we're still not fighting together.
So I'll say this, because, you know, I've seen a different side of this just living in Atlanta. So my question to you is, what is your experience with the other, you know, with the brown community inside of the Alabama institution? Like, what is the experience there? Is there a unification on that front? Like, just
okay. Well, first off,
themselves?
I've never met a person in the Alabama prison system for immigration crime. That's the first thing.
Oh, you haven't?
The second thing. Okay. The second thing is, I've only been to one prison where I saw more than 10 or 15 Mexicans. Like, it's not a problem. That's why I said I want to ask people that are in other states where there's a larger Hispanic Mexican population and stuff, so that they can give me a different perspective, because we really don't have one in Alabama, because we're not up front with the issue. But what I know is that they're locked up in the same federal prisons with my brother or my cousins or dudes from my community or from my neighborhood. So that's what I'm saying.
Okay, so I guess I hadn't taken that into consideration. I just assumed, you know, at Atlanta, Georgia, Alabama, you know, kind of all run together in the yeah. grand scheme of time. So maybe it's just a physical location, because there's a lot of people in prisons and institutions just because of, you know, their status. A lot of times the police will come pick them up in Atlanta from wherever they are, work, whatever. But so I guess, you know, that also is, it speaks to that a little bit, because everybody doesn't have the same level of exposure to one another to understand. And because I ain't never been in prison, I can't really speak to that situation in itself. So I don't know if somebody else wants to take that on. I just thought, you know, I've seen a lot. I've seen it so differently in Georgia versus in South Carolina, just because simply the different demographic of people and the way that people live, and the boldness or lack of boldness in the Black community in regards to getting things done or not, if that makes sense.
I got you. Okay, we're going to take a break. We just had a good conversation about, and then I caught something in the midst of that conversation that, like, her familiarity allowed her to say where their status. Like, now I remember, I hear people saying the word that, like, that's how other people even that are familiar with it even talk about it. Like, that encompasses the issue to say where their status. So even just the language that I'm using, but, like, I'm learning. I'm interested in learning. I see a potential strong ally. I see people that share similarities and circumstances with me and people like me. And even though we got there for different reasons, but I think that now that we are here, I'm just curious as to why we haven't made the connection. And like Lulu said, like, there are people who work to keep us divided, and keep people divided, keep issues divided. The system is a big part of that. But, like, in states where there's, like, massive numbers, like in California and in Texas and Arizona and places like that, even in those places, we still are not seeing a unified front on this prison slavery issue. I'll just say criminal justice issue. Go ahead.
Before we go to the break, I just want, since we're talking about immigration, like, there was a hearing today about a bail bill, and it's a bad bail bill. It's a horrible bail bill. But one of the components of this bill was that bail be denied, and one of the factors was the person's immigration status, which, you know, I mean, the first thing that I thought was, like, now what does that have to do with the person's threat to public safety, right? That a person could, you know, and I know they're probably looking at it like, you know, flight risk or at risk of not attending the court hearing. These are the types of things, like you mentioned, like Texas and California, like these are the types of things that are being eased into the laws, right? That people, I don't want to say they look over, but they fail to take a look once again at, like, the commonalities. Like, look, what does that have to do with a person's risk, you know, to harm someone? Because that's what they're saying. Aside from, you know, the person possibly not attending their court date, public safety, right, and actual attendance are the two main components of whether or not the person should be eligible for bail. And when I heard that, like, and I read the bill several times before the hearing, but, you know, it was something about it being said out loud that, like, you know, the person's immigration status really could deter them from being released, right? And I don't really want to go into the bill, but it just screams racism. Like, it screams over incarceration. And, like, in the presence of a couple of other bills that they're trying, you know, they're trying to build new prisons, it's like, now we got this bill saying that, okay, we can't let people out because they're looking at one county that has an issue with, you know, a rise in crime, they're saying, and saying because of that, that we need to be tough on the bail system for the whole state. And, yeah, I just, you know, because we were talking about immigration, we talked about it earlier, we were watching the hearing, but it just is an example of how, you know, they're easing these they're easing immigration into these issues, and it's not new, like you mentioned, but I don't know why, like, there's such a disconnect between the two communities, but I think that's maybe another initiative for the National Freedom Movement, right?
Sounds like it. And we're going to go to break. We're going to come back, and we're going to finish having this discussion about immigration. Got Brother Mikael on. We're going to be hearing from him on the other side of the break. Thank you to everyone for listening in. We are live from the plantation. We'll be back after the break.
Looks like we always end up dog. And I hate that human love, that stinking mud. Trying to make it real, but compared to what? Said the president, he's got his war. Folks don't know just what it's for. No. Call it treason. I said we're chicken feathers, all without one gut. Trying to make it real, but compared to what? Go to church on Sunday, sleep and not trying to duck the wrath of God. Preachers filling up with pride, telling what he thinks is right. But he must be some kind of stupid nut. He tried to make it real, tried to make it real, yeah. Tried to make it real, real, real. Tried.
one time for the DJ. Max. Mad Max. Thank you for that, Max. We are back live from the plantation starting the second hour. We were talking about immigration reform before we close, and I'm going to read a page from a book just to discuss some of this stuff, and then we're going to get back into the conversation. I know we have Brother Mika L on. We have Mandy from the Carcerated Louisiana on. Brother Ilomba, he's in the queue with us. So let me read something right quick just to kind of, I ain't going to say put a cap on the conversation because the conversation is still open, but just to add some more context. See if this sounds familiar. The federal government, in particular the executive branch, has been the indisputable leader in the criminalization of immigration policy. It has had great leeway to determine how tough to be. Just as the war on drugs served as a bridge to bring local, state, and federal law enforcement authorities closer together, the criminalization of immigration policy rests on mobilizing state and local law enforcement agencies to help implement the new tough stance on immigration. These controversial joint ventures have been subjected to little federal oversight, much like the local anti-drug task force established under the Byrne Justice Assistance Grants, which were discussed earlier. Thanks to the new programs, local and state law enforcement partnership with federal immigration authorities now account for well over half of the immigrants who are apprehended and detained. So like the turn towards mass incarceration, the turn toward the criminalization of immigration enforcement has been...
Did we lose Benu? Savannah, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Matt. I'm not sure what happened with Brother Benu. But I have posted been on my Facebook because I do have some friends who work very closely with immigration and immigration reform. But I think, like, immigration in Texas looks, I mean, so I wanted to point out a little bit earlier that, like, 10% of the folks who work in Texas are undocumented, right? So there's a huge, like, economical component to, you know, what people contribute, like who come over to work in Lulu. You know, she hit the nail on the head that, like, you know, it looks very different, like, geographically, right? When you think about, like, even Texas, as big a state as Texas is, you know, it looks very different here. Like, you go to South Texas, very, you know, very close to Mexico, like, you know, different culture. And it's just the reception of the issue and how it's addressed is different based on where you live in the country and in the state, right, based on, you know, the percentage of the population that's there. So I'm not really sure what other issues when you wanted to hit on. But
he dropped off, it looks like. It looks like that he lost connection. Why? But we do have a couple of callers on if you want to bring them in.
Okay. Did anybody with their hand up?
Yes. Let's start out. I believe this is Mandy at 8979. Your line is open.
Yeah. Yeah, that's this is Mandy with Decarcerate Louisiana.
Hey, Mandy.
Hey. Yeah, I really like this topic tonight. Because it just reminds us all that, you know, we have to be unified in our fight. And our just to prove this point, the vision for Decarcerate Louisiana, I just want to read that real quick. The society that we are trying to build is one that does not have an exception clause for slavery, one where all institutions of society will be used to support people and not punish them, and one where people will be able to learn skill sets, life skills, trades, and become productive members of society. Therefore, no place in society will be used to dehumanize people. And I just wanted to read that because it just reminds me that, you know, nowhere in that does it say black, brown, Republican, Democrat, lower class, upper class. it just reminds us it's us, the people, against the oppressors. And we need to define who the oppressors are. We need to define who the people are. And remember that it's not between us, the people. It's between us and the oppressors, the ones that are oppressing us, the ones that are sticking us and our family members in prisons, no matter if you're coming from another country or you're raised here in the country and you're stuck in prison. You know, like Fred Hampton, when he spoke to the disciples, you know, he reminded them of that and got them on the same team. And that's what we need to do. And I like that Banu brought up this topic because it, you know, it reminds me of that. And I think if we all got together and realized who we were fighting for and we were all on the same team, it would be such a – it would just work so much smoother and so much better and be a beautiful thing.
Thank you, Mandy. You're right.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, when we first started organizing here in Texas around, you know, amending our constitution to abolish slavery, one of our allies actually sent a court case over where the 13th Amendment was used, you know, to argue for someone who was essentially suing the detention facility that they were in. And it wasn't a black person. It was someone who was in an immigration detention facility, right? And so I think, mm-hmm. like, even when we're organizing around that issue, it's important to recognize that, like, these constitutional amendments are being used for everyone, right? So we are highlighting the history of slavery and how it started. But everyone who is being detained at the moment is a slave. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's the only way that we can message this issue. Right. As long as we keep it divided, then, you know, we're never going to be successful in our fight. So I love the work that you guys are doing down in Louisiana. And that's just a perfect vision. And you guys are doing a great job there with
thank you,
y'all. Community.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what the oppressor wants us to do, is to say, you know, they don't want us to come together and unify. I mean, that just helps them more when we don't realize that we're in the same fight.
Since I have you on here, like, we mm-hmm. had talked earlier about the parole webinar, and I know you were part of the research team. So I just wanted to get your feedback on that, like, you know, I got a lot of feedback that, you know, folks were encouraged. They learned a lot from it. But what was your takeaway from it, the webinar last week?
First of all, since I did the research, Victoria and I did anti-effective terrorism and anti-effective death penalty act. And I learned a lot just from researching that and what Banu was saying earlier. I mean, it was all about habeas corpus and taking that away from people. So that's why it does affect the immigrants also, and ones in federal prison. But, yeah, so just learning about all the different crime bills, I learned a lot, and I really enjoyed hearing the other research teams, what they put together. It was a really good webinar.
Great. Thank you for your feedback.
We got two hands up. Let me finish this right here before we jump back on. It says, in 1952, the maximum sanction for anyone convicted of illegal entry was 2 years in prison. The Immigration Reform Act of 1986 raised the maximum penalty to 20 years in prison for people who re-enter the country after prior convictions for aggravated felonies. Since then, by statute and practice, the definition of what constitutes an aggravated felony has been expanded to include many nonviolent or trivial felonies and even certain misdemeanors. So there's just so many parallels. And in 1986, this is the year that the 100-to-1 crack law was passed. Like, these people had a plan in place, and that's the reason why I'm saying that these processes have been joined for a long time, but the movements have not been joined. So we got a couple callers on. I just want to finish that up. So go ahead, Max. Come on with our next caller.
Yeah, I just want to give you an update. In 2018, the Supreme Court ruled that immigrants, even those with permanent legal status and asylum seekers, do not have the right to periodic bond hearings, meaning they can be held indefinitely.
Yes.
So
yes.
1792, your line is open. Your line is open.
You might be on mute too, brother. Check and make sure you're not on.
All right, we'll go to the next one. 9520, your line is open.
Hey, family, this is Brother Elijah. I just wanted to say hello to the family, let y'all know that I'm sitting back listening and enjoying the conversation. I've missed the last couple of weeks, trying to be diligent and trying also to be careful and not to, you know, get jammed up right now, you know, sweating this parole date. But I just want the family to know that I'm standing with you, standing behind you, standing beside you, and I'm here. And just keep doing what you're doing. It's a great topic tonight, fellas, and I'm enjoying it. Peace with that.
Okay, thanks a lot. You know, we shall wish you the best in your quest for freedom. Through the parole board, we know it's a battle. Freedom is a struggle in the United States. Like, these people, they want that freedom, and that once they get it, they don't want to give it back. They're not gonna give it back. So we're gonna have to figure out, you know, what we're gonna do about that. You know what they want to do. We're waiting on caller 1792 to join us. He may be having some issues at the moment. I know he wants to chime in on the conversations. Did you have anything else you wanted to add, Savannah or Lulu or anyone else in the queue? Anyone else want to speak? Press 1. We want to hear from you. You're live from the plantation.
I did want to say something. Two things, actually. One, man, every time you drop off the line, you make my heart jump because I'd be worried that you got, you know, snatched up just that quick. You know?
Me too.
And, yeah. And Brother Elijah, you be on my mind a lot, man, with that, parole hearing and what has happened. That's they're judging people based on that one brother that got out from the drug deals and ended up killing people. So it's like a bad time right now, and be worried about you, brother. So I just want you to know you're in my prayers, both of y'all.
Well, hey, thank you all very much. And, you know, I got a great team with me. And, you know, I got a great team of people supporting me, something that I never had before. And they actually doing research and writing letters. And matter of fact, my attorney sent me a letter and asked me to see if I can get maybe 4 or 5 officers to sign, you know, that's been monitoring me the last 15 years. And it actually went better than I expected. I actually ended up getting like 38, 39 signatures from correctional officers saying that, hey, this man is a model citizen. This and, you know, he's not giving us any trouble, and we support him in being granted parole and be re-enter into society, believe that he'll be a contributor to society. And, man, that was very powerful for me to read that letter and to then to have 38 officers, which would be a whole shift, maybe a half a shift, a shift and a half of officers that have been monitoring me, most of them for the last 15 years, to say this on my behalf. So now if I got the people that's signing on that's been watching me over the last 15 and watching my character, they're saying that this man deserves another chance, then I like to see how can the parole board buck against the truth. You know, if you trust these people to watch over me and to make sure that I don't escape or whatever. And they're saying that this man's character is immaculate or excellent or whatever they said. And I even had a few go beyond just signing their name. They even volunteered to write letters on my behalf because of the person that I am, not with the person I was when I got incarcerated. And so I got a very lot of support, man. And I thank you for your prayers. And, you know, and when you stand on faith, Brother Mac, It doesn't matter how hard times, it doesn't matter what's going on, but that's what I'm standing on. I'm standing on faith. And I believe that even though the parole board is doing what they're doing, I believe that I shall prevail and parole has been granted to me. As a matter of fact, I have it already on my calendar that I've been granted parole on the 30th of this month. So I'm standing on faith, man, and I thank you for your prayers, and I appreciate your concern. And just like you say, when Brother Ben New just drop off like that, people don't realize that in order for us to get these messages out and to tell our stories, we must have these devices. If we never got these devices inside these prisons, then it'll be a lot of stuff that's going on that people wouldn't know about. So now we have to guard these devices with our life. You know, I'll be glad when I make parole because my sleep is cut short because you can't sleep hard because they run in any time of day. They run in any time of night. And like I said, we have to hold on to these things. Because if we don't, when we lose a phone or device, whatever you want to call it, it's our lifeline has been cut off. Because these people don't want us communicating with the outside world. So when Benu dropped off like that too, that's the main reason I stuck my hand up, because I wanted you all to know that there's still somebody from the inside is still here from the plantation to represent. So I just want you all to know that we go through a lot, man. We go through a lot just to hold on to these things so we can have live on the plantation, so we be able to contact the people on the outside to be able to spread the message and what's really going on behind these prison walls.
Thank you, brother. Benu, you got one more hand up, by the way, and I think that Brother Mikael's is available now.
Yeah, I'm here. Man, I apologize to y'all. It's been technical difficulties all day today. But I was a little late, but I caught the last 30 minutes of the first half up. And this is a very, very important topic and issue to me, man. B-New summed it up best. He said that this slave system, this oppression system, they have joined it together, their tactics. They have joined those tactics together and aimed them at each lower class demographic. So they utilize these same strategies and tactics across the board on the black, the Latinos, our brown brothers, and even poor whites. You know what I'm saying? We can even liken the crack epidemic to the meth epidemic that spread through the trailer park system. You see what I'm saying? You can see the same tactics over and over again used on everybody. But the most important thing that he said was that the oppressor has joined together the tactics to aim at all of us, but the resistance movements haven't joined together yet. See what I'm saying? But they are coming together now. People are waking up. People see the truth. It's coming slowly but surely. And in regards to that, I wanted to speak about one thing going on in this targeting ICE facilities, jails, prisons, etc. Now, this is the national shut them down demonstrations, 8/21/99/2021. In the spirit of abolition, on the historical dates of August 21st and September 9th, 2021, organizers must highlight prisoners' historical struggles and current political struggles to dismantle the prison industrial slave complex. Jailhouse lawyer speakers calling for mass outside demonstrations. Specific locations include ICE detention facilities, jails, prisons, and higher learning institutions. With regards to higher learning institutions, we are pointing towards the learning institutions with connections to prison labor. So anybody that would like to be listed as an endorser or would like their shut them down demonstration to be listed, email outthemud.jls@protonmail.com. That's outthemud.jls@proton.com. And also, I would like to highlight something else. We've seen, and we talked a lot the last couple of weeks about, you know, Fred Hampton, because the movie dropped, and we talked about the Rainbow Coalition and bringing people together for the cause and the power behind that. But I've had the honor of working and speaking with some of our elders that's been political prisoners for a long, long time. and I've been living on this planet. You know? And, you know, the thing that I wanted to point out in regards to that is that the topic of our conversation or your conversation tonight, all of them are saying the same thing. So these elders that have been revolutionaries and putting in this work that we took up the banner of for the last 50, 60 years, they have come to the same conclusion that we have. Even though we fight from the inside out first and we organize around our people and our struggle, we have understood and they have understood that it's still going to take a collective of the whole, and that the problems that face us as oppressed peoples in this nation is not relegated just to us, but it also affects other demographics of American citizens, whether they be Asian, the Latinos and ICE, or the whites and the poor whites and what they're going through. So I just wanted to highlight that even those elders, man, that come from these Black Power movements and their old age, so to speak, and the wisdom that they have got from years of experience, they have come to these same conclusions. So it's just a beautiful topic y'all speaking on tonight, one of my favorite topics, and I just wanted to point that out and say that, man. Jailhouse Lawyer Speak is aiming at doing demonstrations with ICE detention facilities, and including those other demographics. And before I get off of here, I also just wanted to share two quick updates. One of these elders, Brother Chip Fitzgerald, he just had a stroke, and he is on a ventilator. So I know that if you're on here, you see the flyers posted on everybody's page, you know, please support and help out that brother. And Rochelle McGee, he just turned 82 yesterday, and he's been fighting for us 58 years in the system, spent decades in the shoe, man. I just wanted to give him updates and point that out, man, and power to the people, man.
Peace, brother. Benny, you got two callers?
Okay, let's go ahead and bring another caller on, man.
All right, 9592, your line is open.
Greetings, Benu. This is Sister McKinney. How are you guys doing? I just want to let you know that I was on the air listening.
I
actually went to Sacramento yesterday in support of solidarity for Rochelle McGee. So, you know, we are still doing the work. We are organizing, getting prepared for April 3rd, and I just wanted to send a shout-out to everybody.
Thank you. We appreciate it. We appreciate it. So, we have one more caller. Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Next caller is 9828. You are live from the plantation.
Hey, brothers, how y'all doing? This is John Lyon with Decarcerate. Behind the walls, I want to say the topic that y'all are bringing up today is immaculate, because behind walls, we understand how they use divide and conquer amongst races. And until we can link that up in the world, in prison also, then we'll be a force to be reckoned with. And I use this scenario a lot. I tell the brothers, I say, one dreadlock is stronger than one strand of hair, so we all must unite and link up. And so every topic that you brought up about ICE and the war on drugs, them are parallel situations. So we need to be able to bring those situations and paint the picture and show the masses that this is no different. It's no different between the black, the white, or the brown who's been oppressed. And what you're doing now is great, and I'd love to be a part of it with Decarcerate, because we all on behind, most of us behind enemy lines. And we moving forward like the brother just spoke. These devices, this is the greatest thing that has come around for us right now, because we're able to reach out to the world and show the world what is going on and what must need to be done. And for me being a native of Texas, when I'm hearing Savannah speak about Texas, to my mind it's like, okay, what is Texas doing? And to see that I have people in Texas on the same path, that's, you know, they're blowing my mind. I'm like, okay, yes, this is great. And I just want to tell everybody online, just stay strong. Stay the course. Stay the course. Mandela says a long walk to freedom. It won't be easy, but that's what we have to do. We have to stay on the path. Thank y'all. Have a blessed night.
Thank you for calling in and sharing, brother. Also, I got another update. I think Max is going to say something, but the House of Representatives in the state of Alabama has passed the new, what they call in the protest bill, where they're going to try to criminalize protest, call it rioting, in the wake of this mass movement that has emerged around the country. I guess we would say, what, since Ferguson, Max? Would that be accurate?
Yes.
Okay, we'll say at least since Ferguson. Here in Alabama, where they've had very little pushback. There's been very little organizing. Everybody's been good in Alabama, and they passing this bill. Like, they don't want to. They know what's coming. Like, these people know what's coming. If they ain't been having these problems, then there's no reason for them to pass this legislation unless they know what's coming. And things are changing around the country. What were you about to say, Max?
Oh, I was just saying thank you earlier. That was all. But I do want to add one thing, since you gave me an opportunity. I want people to realize just how revolutionary this program is. This is not us on, you know, pay phones using JPay or CellTel Link or whatever the hell it's called. These brothers are risking their lives and their freedom just to get these messages out. It's about as revolutionary as you can get. I just want the listeners to understand that.
Thank you, Max. And that was the plan from the beginning. You know, we didn't just stumble up on Plymouth Rock. Like, technology had emerged by 2013 when I was putting this thing together, like, that allowed for me to incorporate technology into my overall idea. Like, and so being able to do that and take advantage of that, it just opened up new opportunities, gave us an opportunity. You always got to be thinking outside the box. Like, you got to be looking for other ways and other areas. And technology gave us an opportunity that people before us didn't have, you know. And so it doesn't make us special or unique or anything. It just means that at that moment, we were able to seize the moment and take this technology and use it in a way that allowed us to spread a movement that was originally just in one state. Like, we have been organizing in individual states for a long time. Like, Georgia had a state protest. California had three big strikes, hunger strikes. Alabama had strikes. Like, but we were all striking on the stateside level. And all of our stateside actions were known. You know, they were known about, but a lot of that reporting that was done on the state side in California and on the state side in Georgia, a lot of that was done by other people. Like, by the time we got the opportunity to get going over here, like, these technology have fully matured to the point where it allowed us to do the talking, like Max just described. And it also allowed us to connect at a faster pace. And it showed us that what our teacher, we were taught by a Panther, and what we were able to do with this technology was, like, it showed us that we can actually organize on a national scale. We didn't have to just organize on the state level. You know, we had been organized on the state level for a long time. And so I just wanted to add those few little comments about what we're doing with the platform. We just heard our sister call all the way from California, you know, and so the proof is in the pudding. Like, we have California on. We have a co-host in Texas on. We have Max operating the radio show for us in California. We have people from, you just heard from multiple people, call in from Louisiana, Alabama. Like, that is what thinking outside of the box or the lines, the boundaries of each individual state allowed us to do with our prison human rights movement, you know, and it allowed us to coordinate events simultaneously at one time across a large piece of earth from a solitary confinement cell. And here we are today. And look out across the landscape. Like, you don't see an organization now hardly from inside the walls that's not talking with nationalistic ambitions, because that's what it takes. But now the opportunity is there. And now the motto has been said, and here we are getting the message out across the nation. Anyone else would like to join live from the plantation? We appreciate hearing from you. We have a great conversation tonight. It's been spend a lot of time talking about immigration. We're just trying to get some understanding on, like, what are the barriers? What are the other barriers that we're going to have to overcome to bring these movements together in all actions? Yes.
Hey, you mentioned the protest law and, you know, in the same context, like highlighting the fact that there hadn't been a lot of really, you know, strong mobilization in Alabama. And, you know, it was said that there are several states that are actually filing laws and bills for stiffer penalties for protests. But do you feel like that this is going to be kind of like a preventive thing, you know, where these states are just kind of falling in line to get these bills on the books as a kind of fear-mongering tactic, if you will? That was my question.
If I can, I would like to speak on that. I was saying in the host queue that Washington is working on similar legislation and also other states. So, yes, they are putting down a preventative barrier for us. And like you said, it hasn't been much with boots on the ground and protests in Alabama, but it's picking up. There has been, but there were small numbers. But now those numbers are growing, and Alabama sees that as a threat. So they want to nip it in the bud before it even starts. That's how they act. That's how they do. This is the hot seat. But like I said, Washington's working on similar legislation, and so is other states around the nation. So that's something that's very important and need to be paid attention to. We need to know our parameters, what we can and can't do, because they're going to try to throw us in the back of those paddy wagons. Also, I want to say that there is a lot of social media that goes around and has been taken down and highlighted certain things. I want to say it was Charleston, North Carolina, where you seen a protest, and they actually got the fist fighting, and it was white versus white. It was the right versus the left. You didn't hardly see a black face out there. See what I'm saying? That's a problem for them. That's a threat. See what I'm saying? That's why they try to keep on prying us apart with different little things. But when we come together, it is a problem for them. So, and also we're speaking about the immigration and so forth and the ICE laws, but, and I spoke on, you can liken the meth epidemic to the crack epidemic, but I left out one thing very important, and that is the opioid epidemic in the suburbs. I have seen disturbing videos where a woman and a man was dead, overdosed in the front seat of their car, and their child was in the car seat in the back crying. I've seen disturbing videos where they just fell out on the train, commuter train, dead. I've seen a video where a woman was laid out in a grocery store, dead, her daughter crying over her. These were suburban white people. These were middle-class white folks. So these issues affect us all. Thank you. Peace with that.
Thank you, Brother Mikhail. I recognize that you had commented on the other states. That's kind of why I reeled that, brought that in. But, like, I also want to say that, like, in Texas, you know, they have a history of going a step further. And I had the bail bill that I had mentioned earlier. A component of that bail bill is restricting community bail funds. So, you know, back when we had the George Floyd protests here in Houston, there were millions of dollars raised to bail protesters out, you know, because there were these mass arrests. And so this bill will limit the amount that these community bail funds can spend on getting people out. I think it's $2,000. They can't spend more. There's a $2,000 bail bond limit. And in addition to that, these community bail funds will have to register with the county clerk and the sheriff's office. So, again, like taking it a step further, so not only are we increasing penalties, but they're also trying to penalize the people who are aiding the organizers. So I just wanted to throw that in there as well.
Okay, great. Thank you. Once again, you're listening to Live from the Plantation. We appreciate everyone for calling in tonight, just having this great conversation. And I guess we're going to circle back to a couple of things. We had talked about the parole webinar that was conducted by the National Freedom Movement this past week, last Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, which prevented us from being able to have a show this week. Just a great informative webinar. We encourage everyone to go and take a peek at it, get that information, and continue to organize. Also, April 3rd is our next national organizing effort. It's amazing. It's amazing that we have so many people that their life literally balances his own life. Their life is, you know, balanced out on this parole decision. Like, parole decisions are life and death decisions more so now than ever, because the risk of death has increased. The volume of death has increased. The ways that we're dying has increased. And people with parole dates, not as many people are getting involved as you would think. Like, this is your issue. Like, this is your life. Like, what would be the reason why you would not be involved? And it's not like there are other parole initiatives going on. I mean, like, it would be different if someone was already doing this for people. But, like, this is your platform. That's what it's created for. It's created for you to fight for your freedom in the context of your circumstance. And, you know, it's amazing, you know, but we have a plan. Like, we have a plan in place. We're putting this is a full-fledged operation. The first leg of it is getting the information out, getting people to understand it, and now we're organizing. We're going to be going into communities. We're going to be going on colleges, HBCUs, and whatnot. We're going to be reaching out to people. We're also just waiting for guys on the inside to, like, figure out, like, what is worth fighting for? Like, when is the fight going to start in earnest and not stop? Like, we've got to get to the point where we're fighting and not giving up on the fight, or not even participating in the fight. Some people not even participating in the fight. Be that as it may, it's never been 100% participation. We're not looking for it. That's not what we're asking for. But we are looking for people that are serious about freedom to have these conversations, to do more. Everybody's got to do more in order for us to be successful. So we're going to get ready to wind down. We got just a couple minutes left. Is there any callers? Anybody want to press one? You have any final words that you would like to say? We're going to do another round the queue to the people in the host queue, Lulu, Savannah, Elijah, Mikael, anyone else who wants to speak. I'm going to yield the floor to anyone who has any parting words.
Yeah, this brother.
Brother Binu. Go ahead, Brother Elijah. My phone dying. I love y'all. I'll see y'all next week.
All right, Mikael. You be blessed. Stay safe, brother. But I just wanted to say this, man. I really sat back, you know, and I'm looking at the parole situation in Alabama, and it breaks my heart, because there are so many grandfathers, man. There are so many great-grandfathers that's incarcerated inside of Alabama prison. And the only way out is through the parole board. And you got grandfathers that done did decades and decades of time, and they're still being denied. Last week, there was 8 people granted parole. And these people had 30 numbers. And when I mean 30 numbers, that's the number that the parole, I mean the ADOC number, when they number people coming in. When I came in, I was in a teen number. So now it took a long time to get from the teens to the 20s. And now we are in the 30s. But they keep making laws and avenues for the people that have the 30 numbers that's not have not done any time. Or haven't done 5 years or 7 years or 10 years. But it's sad that you got grandfathers and great-grandfathers that's in prison who have spent decades inside behind these walls, and they are not being given the chance to go out and try to live their final days, you know, as a free man or a man that's able to go and sit on a fish creek or be able to sit down and tell his grandkids about what happened and how this happened, and just to try to steer them in the right direction. And it just breaks my heart that these people have no compassion not only are they incarcerating and holding the grandfathers in, but this not only take a toll on the incarcerated, but it takes a toll on the grandchildren as well, because there are so many things that a grandfather or a grandmother can teach those grandchildren. There are so many things that they can share with them to try to keep them on the right road and not to end up in the same situation they're in. And I just wanted to share that, man. We got to do something. You know, there's something got to be done. I don't know what. I don't know what the answer is. I really don't. But it's sad that there's no compassion with these people on the parole board, seeing that these people have done decades in prison and you still have the nerve to set them on 5 more years. 5 years for a man that's 60 or 65 or 70 years old, 5 more years is a lifetime. Most of us don't even feel like we have 5 years left in us. But they give us
that's
5 years.
That's right. That's
they
right.
set us off so many times, five. Those fives add up. And in the midst of those 5 years set off, because of the care that we're not getting, because of the conditions that we live in, it's taking a toll on the body. It's taking a toll on the mind, man. And it's like Alabama is no, being incarcerated inside the Alabama prison system, dealing with the parole board, is no different in my eyesight and then having to stand in a gas chamber and having to cut the switch on and take your oxygen away. Alabama just doing it in a slow death way, man. It's sad. And I don't know what we got to do, people, but something must be done. And I pee for that, y'all.
Okay, so I just want to make a closing remark first about to remind everyone about my call for direct action in Texas. We're trying to get a hearing for our House Joint Resolution. So please call Representative Chris Patty and tell him we're trying to abolish slavery in Texas and we need a hearing so we can be heard. His number is 512-463-0556. And regarding National Freedom Movement, like, I just want to say that, like, I love the twofold structure of the National Freedom Movement. I love that it's led by folks on the inside, and I love that we're able to be the support that they need to reach their goals. Like, I just feel so much momentum behind this parole initiative. And I really think that, like, a pathway to freedom really should be our agenda for everything. Like, even with the Ditch the Bitch campaign, like, I think every state needs to aim, every state that has a habitual offender law needs to aim towards repealing and getting rid of it. My loved one was actually sentenced here in Texas under the habitual offender statute. So, again, like, I think just a pathway to freedom needs to be everyone's centered focus, no matter whether we're looking at, you know, freedom through education, freedom through parole, you know, just whatever it is, like working towards keeping everybody centered, safe, focused, and on the outside, right? But that's all I have, and I'll yield with that.
I would like to say that you can get archives of Live from the Plantation from abolitiontoday.org. We're up to number 27 right now. Woot! Episode 27. Next week will be episode 28. Also at Abolition Today, you can check out our interview with Tina Wyatt, the great-great-great-grandniece of Harriet Tubman that we had last week on Abolition Today. So you can check that out at the same location.
All right, National Freedom Movement, we can be reached at the number one, nationalfreedommovement@gmail.com. You got questions about the parole initiative. You got questions about the parole bills that we're putting together. You want to get a copy to push it in your state. And just to reiterate something Savannah said, and we're going to be ready to close out, like, whatever action that you're doing, like, out in front of it needs to be a specific pathway to freedom that people are coming together around. Like, when we talk about the parole, I'm going to use stuff that we talk about, so, you know, just to be particular. When we talked about parole, our parole event was about creating pathway to freedom through two ways. reinstating federal parole, and a mandatory parole criteria. When we're talking about ditch the bitch, we're talking about repealing habitual offender law that automatically releases people. Like, we're putting particular organizing efforts on the table that apply across the board around the country. Like, we're making sure that we're creating very well thought out issues that affect everyone that's simple to organize around. Like, we don't want to complicate. Like, we can complicate parole with COVID-19, over 50, served 20 years or more, juvenile. Like, we can come with all that stuff. We can come with all that. And before you know it, you have a parole list 50 issues long. But at the core, if you got all those issues and you don't have mandatory parole, only thing you're doing is creating an opportunity for somebody to go up for parole, which we already have. Something most people already have. But if you go up for parole and these folks got the discretion to say yes or no, then that's a pirate victim. You just got some pass on the books, but you ain't changed nothing. See, mandatory parole criteria automatically is going to free someone. So whatever it is that you're talking about, you have to have a mechanism involved to free people, or you just organize, or you just doing a lot of stuff. You're doing the most. You know, you're just doing a lot of things. Same thing with the ditch the bitch. Like, we can tell you specifically how this changes people's lives. Like, how this particularly is going to release people. Like, when you're talking about the 20-year max, like, a lot of people have committed crimes that carry 2 to 20, and they got life sentences and stuff because of habitual offender law. They've already did 20, 30 years. You repealed ditch the bitch, they automatically have completed their time. Like, these are pathways to freedom. These are not conversation pieces. These are not flag-bearing horn too. We're trying to be very strategic about how we even select the issue of what we're going to fight for. Thank y'all for joining us. We'll be back every Thursday night. Bring a friend. Bring some more people. If you know someone on the inside, they got access, they can call. Have them call in and let's link up. Tell them to send an email to onenationalfreedommovement@gmail.com. Get involved. We'll see you next Thursday.
Free the grandfathers. Free the grandmothers. Free everybody.
I need.